TDO 212, comm check.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Welcome to the podcast, the Power of Podcasting and Networking and Marketing, something that if you're a podcaster, you need to do,
yes.
Or else no one's going to listen to your podcast. My name is Ming Chen. You might know me from a TV show called Comic Book Man.
Yeah.
I've been featured in a couple of Kevin Smith movies. I guess two things I'm very proud of. One, I helped him get his podcast launched technically when he started in 2007. Bought gear so he could record, did some light editing, got his show onto iTunes. And, since he was famous already, I kind of consider myself like a Houston podcaster, so for sure. We'll go to my left here.
Oh, okay. Chris Jordan, I am the host of Curious Realm, as well as a Talking Sound podcast and owner of the HC Universal Network out of Austin.
We'll go to my immediate right here.
I am Jared McClelland. I am on a podcast here local in Houston called Hi Hungry, I'm Dad. I have had several podcasts, but that is the only one that is actually running as of right now. I have dabbled in my own network as well called Forge Audio that kind of went away during the pandemic and, all those fun times. I have done HIPS, Houston Indie Podcast Society with Ming Chen here. That is still up on YouTube. We have some stuff up on YouTube. So I've been doing podcasting for approximately 7 years now.
Yeah.
So not nearly as experienced as these guys over here with me on the panel, but I do have some experience.
Wow. I'm Trey Lawson, otherwise known as Trader Producer. I am the owner and chief creative officer of Always Press Record. APR TV is the streaming network that I kind of run, and we have 90 different pods that I executive produce. So that's what I do.
Right on. And we've been joined by one of Albuquerque's hottest and longest running podcasters, Chris Burnett,
awesome.
Tendering Minimum. Do you want to jump up?
Mm-hmm.
You sure? Okay. Okay, you're gonna sit there and heckle us like it's like you.
Tell us what we did wrong.
You're totally off base on that. So, the first part of this panel's podcast, I guess, is all about networking.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how you guys use podcasts to network, if at all. I learned the power of podcasting as a networking tool after I started I run a trio of studios in New Jersey called The Shared Universe. And what I've done is I've built three recording studios, and they're just for podcasting. We don't do music. We don't cut tracks. I wanted it focused solely on podcasting. I realized that podcasting was something that everybody could do rather than, say, a recording studio. You need, talent, a band, you need, to sing, a lot of logistics. I'm like, all right, that's fun and all, but I can't do any of that.
Yeah.
I don't have a band, but I can talk, and so can everybody else. So I love that it was for everybody. After we started our studio, though, I noticed our podcasters, they would bring in guests. At first, people they knew, people that they were comfortable with, but then they were reaching out to people in their field that they hadn't met before. Maybe somebody that did something that they admired, and they wanted to talk to them, and they wanted to learn from them. In the old days, before podcasting, you would cold call these people. It's like, hey, can we have lunch? I like what you do. Maybe we can share ideas. And that person would be like, who is this guy? Is he trying to steal my clients? No, I'm not having lunch with you. I don't even know you. Click. Mm-hmm. But that has shifted now to, hi, I have a podcast. Will you come be a guest? I like what you do. I want to hear your story. Almost 100% of the time, they would say yes. One, because podcasting is awesome. It's cool. But they knew they would get 45 minutes to an hour to talk about what they do, promote themselves, and cross over their audiences with this other podcast. And I was like, wow, what a great networking tool. Mm-hmm. So to everybody coming in or anybody that wants to come in, I'm like, this is a very, very powerful networking tool. And,
yes, most definitely. I would completely agree with you. I do have a question for you, though, about Shared Universe.
Yes.
When are you coming to Houston with a studio?
I'm working on it. It's one of those, in Clerks, you know, it's all about Dante not taking any action. And say, shit or get off the pot is the main message of Clerks. I need to do that. All I need is, I'm on the lookout just for a 300-square-foot space. I got all the gear. I know people who help me get, like, the business, the paperwork done. And then what I lack now is time and money, as does everybody
else. Don't we all.
But if I follow the Kevin Smith rule of thumb, he's like, just effing do it.
Yeah.
Figure it out. You'll figure it out later. And this is from a guy who took out 10 credit cards and made a black and white movie with a lot of bad language in it that shouldn't have got as big as it did, and it did, because he believed in it. So I'm working on it because just what I figured, where our studios are, it's, suburban New Jersey. We're an hour away from New York, but it's not a large city. And if it can work there, it can definitely work here. So,
it can definitely
And speaking of networking, I've met all the Houston podcasters.
Yeah.
And through Comic Palooza mainly. I know we know other guys like OZL. He's one of the master networkers around here.
Yeah.
Pod
Houston is pretty big here.
Yeah. Whether you're a podcaster or you're a business owner with a podcast, it's a huge network out here. So. So long story short, I'm working on it, man.
Good. I hope to see that in the near future. Because, there's definitely some studios out here, but I think a shared universe would have its piece of the pie here in Houston as well.
Yeah,
most definitely.
For sure. And, once we do open, we'd network with the other studios as well.
So, yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's I like what we do, I like this kind of con industry. It's a lot of competition, so people, you'll hear stories about people like stealing clients and a lot of drama, if you can believe it. But I feel in podcasting there's inter podcast drama within like maybe hosts and like that, but I feel like we love sharing ideas, we love helping each other out, we love like, hey, what board is that, or what mics are you using, you sound really good, or what are you editing with, or, how did you make that audiogram? Like, everyone's very open. Like, no one's ever like, no, I'm not showing you that. Go do your own work.
Yeah.
There's
not nearly as much gatekeeping.
No. And that it would be asinine to do so.
Right.
I think most of us do not have audio engineering backgrounds, did not go to school for this. We didn't go to radio school to learn how to broadcast. We did it all ourselves. And thus, we made a lot of mistakes. We bought maybe a lot of gear that didn't work out for us and would advise people to not use. And we don't want the other people to make that same mistake. We want them to have a good time doing this and not suffer like we did.
Yeah.
And thus we're very, very, very open with sharing our information for sure.
Right.
Yeah. And thus I think that podcasting, that we've created a climate, an environment, which, just very welcoming. We're all geeks, right? So we remember what it was like to be very isolated, looked down upon, not very cool. So, we're all about welcoming people. And I pass that philosophy on to all the other podcasts that come in. I think my favorite thing about running the studio, and part of the reason it's called A Shared Universe, is most people, we've got podcasts from anywhere from real estate law to, sports, cannabis, the movies and beyond, and paranormal. And my favorite thing is, one podcast will be leaving, another one will be coming in, and they'll meet each other and like, hey, what's your podcast about? I was like, oh, I do a paranormal one. What do you do? Oh, I do one on beer and cartoons. But the guy was like, but I love ghosts.
I have a
secret passion for ghosts. Oh, really? Well, why don't you come on my show next week? It's like, okay, I will if you come on my show. And
you actually did well. You did well by going outside of the house, unlike most people. Like my first two studios were in the house, and both of them, that traffic in between, that 5-10 minutes as we're setting up and everything, that's when the real conversations were happening. I always say, man, I wish we could record the green room before and after.
Yeah. That's a podcast in itself, right?
I've been saying it for a while. It's really one of those where if we could ever just do a fly on the wall and everybody just truly not be cancelable, we would definitely say what we need to say. But you're absolutely right. It's the traffic in between changing. of the curtain, if you will, that people are actually learning that they actually have something in common. Yep. That's the great thing about podcasts, is that it's all about listening and responding. Right. And so you can learn a lot from everybody, it really seems like. I tell everybody, you can make a podcast out of anything. If you only have two topics and the third revolving, you got a show. Let's run.
Yeah, and I think there are podcasts about everything at this point, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I have a podcast about animation, which is weird because, you know, we don't have the visual element on most audio platforms, right? But people listen and tune in just to hear about art that they cannot see, which is even amazing to me as well. So, but it's definitely a niche. It's definitely a new genre. I thought it was radio at the beginning, but it's not radio anymore. It's something totally different.
It's radio in its way. Because, I mean, there's still definitely talk radio that's out there. I mean, it's pretty much 90% of AM radio. It can suck to work on. I'm sorry if you had a bad show. The shows I worked on didn't suck. But the issue that you have when it comes to radio is, once again, the gatekeepers.
Yes.
And trying to get a show, trying to pitch a show, learning how to pitch a show, that kind of stuff. That is where the networking comes in, and even how to get a hold of a production manager, how to get a hold of a station manager to get a show on late night. Even in this day and age, it is still a piece of work to get a show on AM radio.
Which is why I took out the gatekeepers in my effort.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't need, you don't have to worry about anything anymore. It's like, I got an idea for a show. Great. Record. Go.
Yeah.
And At the same token, it does lend itself to an interesting conglomerate of people coming together when it comes to shows and even competing shows. Because when you're talking about shows that are about the same genre, stuff like that, like I've got shows about the same genre on my network. I know numerous networks that don't do that. Like, nope, we've already got a show like that. It's like, but okay.
Yeah, I never agree with that. We got a lot of people coming in and like, I want to do a sports podcast. Aren't there a million of them out there? I'm like, yeah, but how many are hosted by you?
Yeah.
How many have your voice
exactly.
and opinions behind them?
Yeah. You have a special opinion. You have your own unique outlook on a certain topic.
Yeah.
And your opinion might really hit home with somebody else that doesn't necessarily agree with the other show.
No.
So it's everybody's looking for affirmation to some degree. So you might be that affirmation for somebody else.
Yeah. And I love this Comic Palooza podcast program in particular. So I first started coming here 9 years ago. I stepped foot in the George R. Brown around about this time exactly 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember walking, I think, through like Hall C or Hall D. And the first thing I saw was a bunch of dudes podcasting.
Yeah.
I can't remember which. Might have been Carrie's Metal Geeks. And they were interviewing Lou Ferrigno. And I was like, holy crap. This is cool. And there were several, I think at the time, the podcast pavilion or wherever the tables were set were right up front. And up until that point, the only podcasters that I knew back home was pretty much Kevin.
Yeah.
I didn't know any other local podcasters. There were no like meetups or networking or anything like that. No Facebook groups. And so we met other podcasters here. And I was like, well, it felt great. And then I met all of them that we guested on a couple of them. And then they're like, hey, you two we're doing a 101 podcast. You guys want to jump on it? I thought it was going to be like four people. We got in the room. They had to add an extra table. There were 13 of us there at the Podcasting 101. Huge crowd. And I think we met some of the people in the audience later, like in later years. Like, oh, yeah, we were at that panel. We started our own show. We're like, really? Yeah, it worked out. So,
it's a lasting impression. Like podcasting right now is like how they used to write letters back in the Mayflower and say, like, days where like they will eventually watch our content, listen to our content and kind of pick apart how we're living today. And so it is kind of like a time capsule type of moment in this genre of media.
Yeah. And I love how this has grown from that, from 2014 to this, two like really cool looking stages.
Yep.
Podcasting, like, you know, the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
It's been pretty amazing. I think I just mentioned to you, like, I think this should be at every Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Something like this. and it's not. And my dream scenario is, if you go down the floor, you have Artist Alley, a whole row of artists. Why is there not a Podcast Alley?
There's enough of them.
Sure.
Yeah, there should be a Podcast Alley. Hey, charge them for the table, or maybe give them a discount. Do you know they're going to promote the con? Mm-hmm. They're going to talk about it before. They're going to podcast at the convention, and they're going to talk about everything that happened after.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's like such a great marketing tool for the convention.
Yeah.
And and I think once that gets going, it should be expanded to the point where all the celebrity guests at the convention, they will all want to come down and sit down for 5 minutes with each of the podcasts there. Like, not be required to go, but want to.
Yeah.
Because they're promoting maybe an independent project they're working on. They probably have their own podcast that they want to promote. And, logistically, it might take a little while to get off the ground. But that's the future I envision, and I hope to be right in the middle of it.
I can see that. There's enough of them. And you mentioned earlier, most people come into the game and they're not audio engineers.
Yeah.
They're really learning and trying to figure it out as they go along, like I did many years ago. And what you're saying is absolutely right. There's a marketing aspect that there's a curve that we've all had to learn on how to make people turn into like unique names. You know what I mean? Like every single podcast has a name where you go, really? That's the one you chose. Okay. And you have to figure out how to get people to find it. Like even for me, I shorten my name, but it's always Fresh Record. You know what I mean? And people go, the funniest thing about that I didn't realize, and this is marketing later, is that everybody thinks we're audio because of the record player. And it's always at a certain age group where they never ever... They say record. Always press record. And then it's like, oh, no, not
does
vinyl.
That, does that happen?
That always happens all record? The time. It happens all the time.
Okay.
And then the young kids is always press record because they're used to YouTube. They're used to the whole movement.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it's things like that where even my name, we had to shorten it a bit because it's hard to find. It's hard to translate. But that's part of the marketing that you learn as you go through. There's unique names. Even Curious Realm was one of them that we've had to push. And it's we did a whole name change from Dudes and Beer to Curious Realm so that we can get on to more platforms and more family friendly little venues.
And a lot of things that people do not realize is the long game.
Yeah.
I mean, not that Dudes and Beer wasn't a fantastic name, not that it wasn't
a great
concept when we started, but it definitely grew beyond what we were.
Yeah.
And yes, became a point that it became a stymieing point with larger guests as I was fractally moving up and getting to talking heads on TV, getting to major researchers, things like that. There were a few that once I changed names and they came on, were very honest with the fact that their handlers did not want them on a show called Dudes and Beer, despite the other guests that I'd had who were world famous in their industry, things like that. And then it even became a point that I couldn't boost an ad on Facebook because beer was in my title, not Michelob, not like Dudes and Michelob. Like I see ads for Remy Martin, but I could not boost an ad for my own show anymore on social media because of rules that exist. And that's something that you need to think about if you're trying to grow a brand, if you're trying to bring a brand to a larger audience. And even the fact of Dudes being in my title. Awesome. I just scooted out half the people who don't understand that's just a general term. It's not a general term. It was interesting to see that even with my marketing background, because Dudes and Beer did amazingly well from the beginning. We were asked to go out to tons of stuff that was specific to the name. And as we grew, it was something that we kind of had to spin and change.
My favorite note about that whole thing is that episode 300, when we did the name change, we set him on fire for the thumbnail.
Yeah.
So it worked out well.
That was classy.
I've been very fortunate as of right now. I haven't had to change names for any show. I know that there is a lot of marketing to go into that specifically whenever you're changing name, because whenever somebody's looking for your show specifically and they're like, oh, I'm so used to it being Dudes and Beer.
Yeah.
All of a sudden it's not on my feed anymore. Well, you need to get out to your audience and say, hey, by the way, that's why, like, a lot of times if you are going to go through a name change, you have to, several episodes ahead of time, remind them, hey, this is going to be changing. This is going to be changing.
Every episode for 9 months before the name change. Yeah. Every episode I mentioned that we were changing names for 9 months, and we lost very little listenership actively gained.
That's really good.
And within a couple months because of that, our social media numbers went up. All kinds of stuff because, we were much more focused and on brand. And having people, you know, even sitting back talking with other hosts, talking with people like Todd Cochran from Blueberry Podcasting, that kind of stuff. It was really great mentorship when it came time to relaunch and rebrand everything.
Did you learn that from your time working with InfoWars?
What's that?
Just like how branding and marketing, or is it just...
Probably the most... integral thing that I learned from that is that you move your audience.
Right.
Period. Know your audience. It doesn't matter what platform you're on. Mm-hmm. They will follow you. If you don't have your own website, you're a fool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, I mean, even as of 4 years ago when the rules changed for YouTube monetization, mm-hmm. if you do not hit the benchmarks of monetization by the point of monetization, their 6 month, 9 month point, their 10,000 views, any of your content can be deprecated. You will wake up one morning, they'll be like, sorry, you're a waste of server space and bandwidth.
No more money for you.
No, not even money. You never hit the point of monetization, right. Which means they can't get money off ads. So your content is gone. Great that you used a free platform, but that's happening more and more. And we've started seeing it happen on numerous platforms where things were free and are moving to the point of no longer being free because free is not a sustainable model.
No.
And that's something to be considered. So if you want to do a show and just do 10 episodes, something like that, see what it is, feel free, put it out there. But if you're looking at something that you intend to make a going effort, if you're looking at something to do for your business, like we were saying earlier, it really is one of the best networking tools for businesses out there.
You can promote literally everything.
Well, absolutely. And you're actively setting yourself up as an expert in your field to begin with.
Right.
And to not have that branded on your own platform can be rough and really obscure things a lot.
Well, you're asking a lot from the audience a lot of times. So, like, if you start off with one destination that's never remained, like, that's never changing, it's easier to get people back. Like, when you're over, like, this is where I'm at, this is where you can find me, this is where you can find me. Like, if everybody's using Apple Music to find you, to find your show, and you change, then it's like, oh, wow, why did y'all do that?
Yeah.
It's jarring, yeah.
No, it's really drawing. And the thing for me is that when we started, everybody was coming with the YouTube dreams, right? Mm. Like, we all saw Ryan's Toys review where he made $10 million in that 1 year and was on the cover of Time magazine. So that's when a lot of people started calling me up all of a sudden and was like, hey, can you help me become a YouTube star? Because that's the thing.
Yeah.
But it's really about putting out the content. If you put out the content in a very steady manner and you're consistent with it, then one, it does make you the expert in the field. Mm. Two, you do grow your audience, and then you have like your own core audience that you can take anywhere. And that's really the goal, right? Is to take that core audience, take them wherever you need to go, and monetize as you can in a very, you know, ethical manner.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what advice do you give folks on Shared Universe when it comes to, I guess, not only promoting their show and getting it out there, but as far as monetization, things like that, paths to monetization?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I warn them, this is not a get-rich-quick scheme. Yeah,
absolutely.
That, you know, if it even happens at all, it's going to take a long time. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to create content, record shows that will build an audience.
Yeah.
First, I'm like, all right, you've got to tell people you have new episodes, that you have a show. So that goes into the marketing aspect. You know, what are you using to tell people that you're out there? Social media is fast. It's free.
Yeah.
you can theoretically post as much as you want. My analogy to them is like, listen, if you started your own small business, you know, say a hardware store or ice cream shop, you can't just open it and like, all right, I'm open, everybody come. You know,
yeah.
you gotta advertise, you gotta tell people you're out there, and you know, the quickest, cheapest way is to do it through social media. So, you know, whatever their preferred platform is. Hopefully all of them.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of people are kind of stuck on, you know, one or two, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, all very, you know, not hard, you know, pretty user friendly. You don't have to put in a ton of work and, you know, I'll help them out, you know, with graphics and marketing. And through, you know, I was lucky enough to be on a TV show, so I got a pretty decent social media following. So as a feature of our business, like I'll help you market. I'll tell people that, you know, your first few episodes are out there, but follow my lead. You know, look at how we do it. Kazi post, Instagram stories are a great way to just get that. Gary V, any of you Gary V fans out there, he's always got to post 60 pieces of content a day. And
which is why you need an editor if you don't know how to edit.
Yeah. you know, with a recording, you know, one hour episode, you can chop that up into, you know, maybe 10 clips.
Sure.
And post that up there, create an audiogram or, you know, a closed caption, you know, put a best of clip up on there. That's one way. Use Spotify's, you know, share the story feature. Things like that. You know, do a quick video or story. It's like, hey, I'm about to record an episode. That's one. Hey, I'm recording an episode. That's two. Hey, I just finished recording an episode. Three. Hey, our episode's out. Just, you know, and I keep telling you don't know how these algorithms are working. You know, you post one, not everyone's going to see it. So, you know, throw up something once a day. And I tell them, marketing your podcast, it's work. It's going to be another job.
Yeah.
You know, if you really want to let people know you're out there, then, you know, and if you can't do it, you know, hire somebody or get your, you know, have somebody help you out. Or if you have co-hosts, make it a team effort.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely social media, the virtual world, getting that out there. I tell them have, you know, if occasionally have a guest from another podcast, cross over your audiences. Yeah. That'll help you grow as well. And then thirdly, I'm like, you know, don't forget about the real world. There are real people out there. Go to Vistaprint. Print out the, what is it, 1,000 cards for whatever, like $5.99 or even business cards. Bring them to places like Comic Palooza. I see a lot of our fellow podcasters and just cards, QR cards. Codes.
Yeah,
throw the QR code.
I was
going
to say, get a Wing card or a Popple. Those things work great.
Yeah.
I love my Popple.
Yeah, but yeah, it's another job though, for sure.
It is. It is.
But it's one that I enjoy. If you love creating that show, you're going to also enjoy telling people, marketing it.
I think that is probably, out of the years I've been doing this and helping people with my network, probably the biggest comment that I've had is, wow, this is actually a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's like, yes. Yeah. It's much more than just sitting on a microphone for an hour. Like even my show, which is done live, has no editing involved whatsoever because it's based on a radio show. So radio show format, I don't recall ever editing anything except commercials out when I was on air. Yeah. So I don't have commercials typically.
Yeah.
It's one of those. There's a ton of work that goes into the back end of doing a show.
Well, for the new podders, right? Like I always give them like eight episodes. It's going to take you eight episodes, especially if you're doing multiple people. It's going to take you eight episodes to figure out how not to talk over each other, how to actually carry on a conversation for 45 minutes that's actually interesting. A whole bunch of all those are eliminated. Like it takes about eight shows for that to happen. Maybe even less is what I do as the timetable to get comfortable. Like what would y'all say for new podders? Because we all deal with people who say, I want to do that. Like what would y'all say?
Yeah,
five to ten.
I feel people find it within 5 to 10 episodes. They find their footing. You see the first five. They're not quite sure of themselves. And then I see it.
Yeah.
That one day they march in. It's like, all right, let's go. I'm ready. I'm like, wow. I love seeing that moment. That switch kind of gets flipped after about 5 to 10 episodes.
Yeah. That's what I say.
I would say around that same time frame. Usually I would suggest people, hey, record three episodes and don't put it out. just see how it goes. See what you think about the show and understand what you need to tweak.
Yeah.
Understand, like, hey, you know, we keep stepping on each other's toes when we're trying to say something. And you'll naturally get those cues between each other whenever you've co-hosted for so long together that you kind of understand. And then whenever you get comfortable with doing it with your co-host, then you start being able to do it with other hosts, because we all have those same kind of connections to, oh, hey, you know, somebody's getting ready to speak because they're leaning up to the mic, or, you know, you'll see these little social cues to understand somebody's about to say something.
So monetization is tough.
monetizing
anything is tough.
Yeah.
I learned from the best, Kevin Smith. Mm-hmm. He's one of the guys who's figured out how to make money doing this.
He's gotten a lot of money.
Yeah. He puts out a great show, first and foremost.
Yeah.
But he's able to sell advertising on those shows. But he's taking it a step further. We're like, hey, wait, I can do a live podcast every week at the Hollywood Improv.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
An hour there where I can sell tickets to the live podcast. Then I post that episode up, sell ads on top of that.
Yeah.
And then, I'll record some exclusive content at that live show and put that up and monetize that.
Yeah, with Dudes and Beer, I actively went out to local breweries, bars, stuff like that. And it was like, I no different than whenever I had a band. It was, I'll have a piece of the bar while I'm on stage. Yeah. And I would bring 50, 60 people from Austin. And you've now got like 50, 60 of age drinkers in your establishment. So
I tell people the quickest way, if you're here to make money, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
But if you concentrate on making a great show, the money might come later on.
Yeah.
But concentrate on the show first.
Yep.
Not the money first, because it's probably not going to happen.
Well, and I think, once again, that is where a lot of people get disillusioned rapidly. Yeah. It is a numbers game, and it's one of those, like, if you want to chase Squatty Potty money, you can, but you're going to need Squatty Potty numbers,
right?
And you're going to need to be able to show that. Whereas if you go to a local business, if you go to a family owned business, something like that, and give them the pitch of, I've got a few thousand listeners that tune in every month. If you could put a $50 ad up on our website, it doesn't have to be like a $10,000 deal. You can sell quite a few ad spaces on a website really fast at $50 each and make that a sustainable, at least it's paying for itself, endeavor rapidly.
Yeah. So I tell them, not only hit the family run businesses, hit the businesses run by your family.
Yes.
Even better.
Yes.
Like, hey,
I
was like, if you want ads, hit all the people that you know with, who are mostly successful businesses. First and foremost, your friends and family less apt to turn you down, although they will. Like, most people will be like, we'll say no. I was like, hey, reach out to all the local businesses. Or what's your podcast about? Is your podcast about skiing or beer?
Yes.
Go to the brewery. And breweries, there are 100 of them at each city. They're all at each other's throats trying to get their word out there.
And if you think that 2 cases of beer every other week doesn't start adding up when you're talking about things in your studio that are used to produce your show, I beg to differ.
Oddly enough, I've been getting a lot of free beer lately.
Yeah.
I can't drink it all.
That's what it became for me. I was literally traveling around the country with a pelican of beer with me, because I would record live and it's like, well, here's my sponsor's beverage. People would just crack up that I was actively traveling around with like an 18 pack of beer and a pelican with me.
I'll send you a case of off-air beer that we made. It's a beer that we did as a marketing ploy, because that's what we do.
Yeah.
And so, because everybody was once again in the house after hours, we came up with the off-air beer. And so that's what we've been doing. It's kind of cool. It's one of those things where, once again, out of everything that everybody's saying, I'll just add in that content is king. If your content isn't there, you're never going to get over to the point of selling a t-shirt. And like, you can make money off of selling said t-shirts, but it's one of those things where if your content isn't bringing them there every single time, then anything else that you're doing swag wise is not going to be, it's not even going to be worth it. So
yeah,
the two most important things, content and quality.
Yeah.
Those are the two big things. If you don't have the content, nobody's going to listen. If you don't have the audio quality, people are going to usually tune out.
You can get that. Yeah, the quality, you can get there. I say everybody has, because we record everything. Everything is salvageable with our skills. And so really and truly, our whole thing is to get you past that 8, right? And so, taking those 3 off might be the thing, but we like to do, as part of our marketing rollout, is we have a brand new thing on the network. Everybody needs to come so that everybody's kind of sharing their same views, and everybody on the network has to then share the new person. You know what I mean? And from doing that, we did a lot of our growing pains in front of people, but it's also kind of taken away some of the mystique of it. And is brought in more people to have that courage to get in front of the camera, because we record in front of the camera no matter what. Because in my early days, when we were not using the Studio Pros and everything else, that was my backup on the iPhone, was my backup audio. So we used to record everything and have everything as the video. So what was the byproduct was actually what we came to do as the main product. So.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, it was out of necessity, like everything else.
Coverage, right?
Yeah, no, you have to. You can't tell the client that, especially when you only have 4 clients, that you did not press record on the Sony camera and that it shuts off after 29 minutes.
Yeah.
So I don't have the whole thing. But an iPhone can stay on for at least 2 hours if you have it plugged in. And that's salvageable audio video. I mean, that's how it was in the beginning. And, you do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about cross promotions? That's one of the things we haven't really talked about just yet. Like, if you're an indie podcast and you're finding people who are in the same realm of content as you are, like if you're talking about comic books and you reach out to other people, say you find another podcast that's on Twitter or, whatever social media platform they're on, and you reach out to them and they're like, hey, I like your content. Maybe we can do something. Would you like to do a promo swap? How do you guys feel about stuff like that?
I mean, him and I, we actually got to know each other because our two shows is Scary Dad and Pressing Issues, which is about comics, and the other is about horror. We were both producing it, so we talked to each other, on a strange, hey, man, I should know you. Are we going to put this on my network, your network, both networks, all networks? And it's one of those things where that's how you build your community. I always tell, if you have a comic, like just to say a comic pod, right? Then the first thing you should do is go over to every comic book store around, interview those people, right? Find out if they know anybody who's also, because everybody goes, oh, my friend has a podcast, and be like, oh, let me just get them. And eventually you'll have enough guests to get through 52 episodes, which is one a week, right? And you're really not even going to do that. You're probably only going to do 25, maybe, but you need to find those guests. How are you going to find those guests? Sometimes you trade an audience for another, boost it up. Rise all sinking ships. Is that what they say?
Yeah.
I always get it wrong.
When water rises all ships.
Because it really does. It really does. And so that's what we do as far as the swap. But I say, especially for those new, because I always say that first aid is the hardest, and especially trying to get the guest. If you're over a guest show, do that. Do that swap for everyone is what I say.
See, I mentioned Forge Audio, the network that I was on in control of for a while, and that's what the whole concept was, is, hey, come on the network. We're all kind of pop culture-centric shows, and we're just going to promote each other. Everybody put an episode – or not an episode, but everybody put a promo at the end of their episode and for the next show that's on the list, and we would just do a constant rotation.
Yeah.
I think cross promotion is extremely important. Not only to cross over the audiences, but social media is like, hey, I just had this guy from this other podcast on. They'll share that. Their audience will share that. It's a very easy way to get just to get your content out to maybe an audience that wouldn't have listened to it before.
Mm-hmm.
And not all of them will subscribe, but if you get a few, it's like, hey, that was pretty cool. I'll keep listening to this. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. To me, it's like the comic book crossover.
Yeah,
it's Batman and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles going to Gotham.
Yeah,
how about Batman? Like that's just cool.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing. And I like, you know, I meet a lot of podcasts at the conventions. Like, hey, can you come on my show maybe next week? And if I have time, I will. You know, it's been increasingly harder to schedule out that 30 or 45 minutes lately, but I'm gonna just, you know, just keep asking. I will come on at some point.
Oh yeah, you've been good about that for the most part. Like, trying. If anybody shows up to your booth and says, "Hey, can you do a quick session?"
I've been trying. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if they're a recorder there, I'm in right away.
Oh,
let's do 5 to 10 minutes. Because not only do I love it, but you know, it looks fun. Podcasting at my booth, it's awesome.
Yeah, that's how we met a few years ago. Yeah. Was I came in and just did a stand up there at your booth while I was just randomly interviewing people on the show floor.
Yeah,
and for me, I guess the question of whether or not to cross over comes back to question number two about your show, which is quality. And that's not even quality of the show that you're going on, but quality of their share. The number, I literally metric my guests by how they share and whether or not they're coming back on, period. I do not care how famous they are. I have had very famous people that want to come back on, and it's like, nope, sorry, you shared nothing. If you were sharing it to your audience, it'd be great. But I guess I go back to my old days of radio production and being a guest booker for a host and literally Google stalking the people.
Yeah.
If they come to me and want to do a cross promo, I start digging through social media metrics real fast.
Because if
we aren't mutually sharing that to the same, I don't even care if it's the same size audience, it's with the same fervor. Like, if you are not shamelessly promoting your show 2-3 times a week, if you aren't dropping things, if you aren't like, hey, tune in next week for this, that kind of stuff, typically my answer will sadly be no, because it's not going to do my audience any good or yours. You're not promoting your show.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of indie podcasters don't want to do. They want to get that famous person on the show as much as possible.
Oh yeah.
But they're never willing to ask them, hey, can you share this?
Yeah.
Or expect them to say I will be sharing this.
I think this
is the thing I'm trying to promote.
I think more than that, they get hurt with the expectation of them to share it without actively providing them what to share.
Right.
Like, literally, I give them the 2-paragraph description with a link from the website. Yeah. All you got to do is copy paste this. You don't have to write anything.
I did
cover, copy, paste, boom. And numbers shot through the roof. Participation numbers from guests shot through the roof. I saw them sharing it much more, sharing it much easier, because I literally took the work out of their hands. They don't have to think about how to promote somebody else's show.
Right.
Nothing is as defeating as working, because every 45-minute show is usually around 90 minutes, maybe an hour sometimes. Like, I know you can do the stand-ups and whatnot, but every 45-minute show is at least an hour. So you get to the end of that, you do all that work, and then nobody shares it. Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
That's so sad. It's like, what do you do? But that's part of the game. And so...
Well, and if you're talking about editing also, you're talking depending on how meticulous you are about.
Doing green screen stuff. Stuff, like just taking it up to the next level, you put Premiere on a slow computer. That's four or six hours.
Matching and color matching and audio matching 3-4 cameras.
Yeah.
That is a lot of work. That's a lot of detailed work to put into something.
Because I believe in the I Love Lucy setup of the 3 cameras. So I was taking all 3 cameras and I was doing it for every show. And I was, in the end, you just go, wow, and you didn't even share it. It's your own show.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there have been people, I don't think I've ever, quote, kicked anybody off my network. But I've definitely been like, hey, you know, literally all we ask is a hashtag.
Not that hard.
Like,
not that hard.
Hey, we got a new episode. Hashtag HC Universal Network. Like, I'm hoping you're hashtagging your show in the middle of that. But it is sad sometimes to see that, because some of that is platform specific. And you were mentioning earlier to make sure to get content for all of these. And there are specific, like, my wife's a Twitter magnate. I cannot tweet to save my life properly, because there's a way that you tweet. There's a way to hashtag properly and get eyes on things. And if you're not in that, it can be tough to properly utilize that. And you can be vapidly wasting an hour, 2 hours trying to figure out Twitter every day when you could be making your TikTok presence stronger if you're really good at that.
Yeah.
You know, and I always go back to a show I worked with Rooster Teeth years ago when Periscope was a thing. And somebody came up, the CEO of Rooster Teeth and one of their creative directors was on a panel, and they asked why they didn't have a Periscope channel yet. They're like, we typically wait a minimum of a year before we join any social media platform. Once we join a platform, we have to find somebody that is dedicated to that platform. We have to figure out how that platform shares, how to focus the media for it, everything else. It is literally a side stream business to what we're doing. So if it's not there in a year, we've put a lot of effort behind it. I kind of have rolled with the same thing. If it's something that my audience is on, that my demographic's on, absolutely, I'll give it a shot. But if it doesn't shake out in like 4 or 6 months, I'll normally side pan it and just go back to my studies that I get really good traffic on.
No. I may have any questions to the our huge audience out here lined up. I guess my last thing, is there anything you're currently doing to market your podcast? Anything maybe new out there that you want to make people aware of? I've been making a lot of audiograms just for Premiere. It's got a great, really great transcription feature, which you can turn into the captioning on like Instagram Reels and Instagram Stories. Has been working out really well lately. Not that hard to do. I mean, it is a little time consuming, but fun. Is there anything you're using lately to promote?
We've been using Reels as well, but the way that we're doing it is because it's weird. The vertical video has taken over everything, and I'm a horizontal
dude. You can tell what people share where by how they take a picture.
So, like, we have a format now to where, like, you know, when we have our premieres or whatever we're dropping, like, we can put it into a vertical reel that has, like, a template almost just for the speed of it all. Right. But it's like, I'm making cartoons, man. All these things just should not be within the dimensions of whatever phone anybody's using.
We live in a widescreen format. Two by six
format.
I'm like this. And so I got to change my whole. And then, like, you see how it because I noticed the simple things, right? Of how they're like, how they might just crop it to where there's two people and somebody's nose is in one end of the frame, and then you have a whole, like, I can't deal with that. And so, like, it takes me so much to reconfigure the film that we've already made. And so I just don't even, I'm horrible about it. Maybe it's an age thing or something like that, but like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all of them, they're all such a side, like, just a side hustle for me, to where you should have somebody who only does that and only thinks about that. Because as far as me, I'm like, we're cutting up to do what? What are we doing? We already cut it to make it beautiful. Why are we making it to where it fits this limited form? But I mean, Reels is what it is, man. Everything's vertical now. Crossover.
For now.
For now.
TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Reels, they're like, I don't know how many podcasts I've found in bands and just movies and just content in general, just based off of TikTok, YouTube Shorts, and Reels.
Yeah.
Myself, I will bring it right back to what this panel is about. Hardcore networking. I have been actively going out and sponsoring shows that are in my genre, sponsoring conferences like MUFON and that kind of stuff that are on a national scale and literally put me in my show directly in front of my desired audience, where I can shake their hand and give them stickers and have them scan a QR code.
Amazing. Well, thank you guys. I'm glad I met you guys.
Absolutely.
It's you know, the best kind of networking in my book.
Absolutely.
And, of course.
May we continue to do this for a very long time. here at Comic Palooza. Thank you guys for being in the audience.
And, Thank you.
Yeah, hell of a weekend, my friends.
Yes.
Hell of a
very
weekend.
Good weekend.
It's been great.
Been very inspiring. You know, I'm going to take this back home to New Jersey, and you know, it's going to fuel me for the entire year until we get back in 2024. So
2024.
Yeah, it's just an honor to be at this table with you guys. So,
yeah, same.
Thank you, too, guys. Thank you, guys.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Comic Palooza. So,
yes, thank you, Comic Palooza. Thank you to everybody in the audience, and we'll see you next year.
Yeah.
See you next year.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Talking Sound Podcast. For more episodes, industry news, and information, visit us online at talkingsoundpodcast.com. Subscribe to the Talking Sound Podcast on Amazon Audible, Spotify, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, or your favorite podcast service. Get the latest Talking Sound videos on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Reach TV, or your Roku or Amazon Fire device with the APR TV app. Talking Sound is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great shows and content, subscribe to HCUniversalNetwork.com today. Until next time, watch those meters, gig safely, and keep reaching for 11.
Talking Sound.